Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. Let me pray. God, just super grateful for how big your kingdom is, super grateful for the men and women in this room that are leveraging their lives for people, God, that view, and to help people find and follow you. We want to just be better at what we do, not because we want to make our name great, but because your name is great, and we want to lean in together. We want to be great teammates and great leaders and great bosses, and we're going to need your help to do that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So I'll tell you a little bit of my story, and then I'll do some leadership principle stuff. I think one of the things, the four things that we're going to kind of walk through on the healthy team is there's some leadership stuff that involves being a part of a healthy team. There's some hiring stuff when possible, and that doesn't have to just mean paid staff. It can be volunteer staff. You can hire them as well without money. And then there's a development piece, and then there's a culture piece. So that's kind of where we're going. But I grew up in Owosso, Oklahoma, the thriving mecca of Owosso, Oklahoma, suburb of Tulsa. I'm not a church kid. I did not grow up in the church. The thing I knew about church is that when I went to my grandparents' house in St. Louis, Missouri, we would go to church and all the guys wore robes. And so I'd never seen a guy in a robe before. And so, and then we had donuts and orange juice at the church. That's all I knew when we went to St. Louis. When I was older in junior high and high school, I came to Christ. Christ rescued me. And I was one of those kids that walked in super cynical. I'm like, what is this? The first person invited me to church told me that I couldn't wear shorts at their church. So I didn't know why I couldn't wear shorts, if something was bad about knees at church. I didn't know any of that. He ended up being my best man in my wedding. I was the best man in his wedding. Ended up going to feeling like God had called me into ministry, and it terrified me because I didn't know what the heck that meant. And so I went to a Christian college. Come on in. I went to a Christian college in Joplin, Missouri, and it was the first time that I'd ever been around a bunch of Christians in my life, and it was at a Christian college, and I literally walked in and went, oh no, everyone here is weird, and I don't fit in, and I need to leave quickly. But God was good to me on that. I remember taking an entrance test at Ozark that they make every like incoming freshman fill out so that they, at the exit, they can kind of prove to me how much they've educated you. And I remember going, I didn't know one question on the test. I was like, I was so depressed. I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't know any of this stuff. I don't know a lot about the Bible. God has rescued me, but I know what I'm so called to, but I don't know any of this. And everyone at my school is weird. So that's what I thought. It wasn't true. It was what I thought. And I ended up walking into a coffee shop in Joplin, Missouri. And there was a guy playing a Pearl Jam song. And I'm like, well, Pearl Jam's my favorite band. And so that guy goes to my school, so that can't be all bad. That ends up being, T.D. Oakes ends up being one of my best friends in the world and is the worship leader at Mission Church. So we've known each other for a long, long, long time. But Ozark was really good to me. God was good to me at Ozark. Grew up my heart and my mind, kind of blended those things together of what I was called to, kind of clarified some. Went to Lexington, Kentucky, where I met a preacher's daughter. And she pursued me, and finally I gave in, and we got married. 4 months after we got married, found out we were pregnant, so it was game on for us. My wife, Jody, who, if you've been in the sessions, she's the pretty redhead girl. She's the pretty redhead girl. We're married. We have 3 daughters, a 13-year-old daughter now, 10-year-old daughter, and a 7-year-old daughter. That's a lot of estrogen in my house, so you can be praying for me. But we're having a blast. But we don't know... We don't know life without being married and in ministry together. That's just the way that it's been for us. We were in high student ministry together. It's always been the way it is. So we planted Mission Church in Ventura, California 4 years ago. We just celebrated our 4th birthday. So we're super stoked about it. We meet in a movie theater right off of the 101 in Ventura, California. When we launched, the movie theater was working. And then about a year into us meeting there, they built a multi-million dollar facility a mile away, and they were going to board up the theater that we were in, and we said, is there a way that we can use it? They said, well, no, you can't use it. Long story short, providentially, they let us rent it for sublease it for pennies on the dollar. And so where it used to say Century Theaters on the outside of the theater, it now says Mission Church. So it was a Century 16. We used like the lobby and the four theaters on the right. It's a sweet setup. Our sublease ends at the next September. So if you want to be praying for us, we don't know what the heck we're going to do then. So it'll be fun. We've seen, it's been pretty crazy what we've seen. We've seen just a lot of people find Christ. Ventura is messy, and I know we're all in messy places, I hope, but Ventura doesn't hide mess real well. There's different places that hide mess real well. Ventura is not one of them. What you see is what you get. A lot of addiction. There's a lot of, the Hell's Angels used to have headquarters there, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm sure you don't watch Sons of Anarchy, but Ventura is very much like what I would consider Charming from that show. So it very much is that. There's a lot of seedy side of what's going on there. So we have probably, and I don't say this to be anything crazy, but we probably have 800 to 900 people that are coming to church. It's ridiculously. We're like, I stand in the lobby, I'm like, who are you people and how did you hear about Mission? Is one of the things that we said. We've baptized over 250, almost 300 people in the 4 years that we've done. So we have the Pacific Ocean as our baptistry, so that's fun. So, and his mom goes to our church, so that was good. So a lady came up to me and she's like, my son is a church planner. I'm like, I love church planners. Tell me about it. So it's been cool to see all that God's done. So what I want to do first, and please stop me, ask questions along the way. There'll be time for questions too at the end. So I'm going to give you the best thinking that I've got about what a leader's responsible for. And it's probably not original to me, but I've been just kind of holding it in my head for a while, and I've been working with our staff through it, trying to figure out what all this means. So what I think a leader is responsible for, and this means a team you lead, a ministry you lead, an event you lead, a church you lead, a party you throw, whatever it is that somebody has said you're responsible for this. So I think that we are responsible for the why. Like the vision, the where are we going and why are we doing it. Like no one else can, you cannot outsource the why as a leader. You are responsible for it, for your team, for maybe even your family. I'm just trying to, whatever slice the responsibility you own, you are responsible for the why. But you're also responsible for the who. This is the people, the roles, the positions, you name it. The recruiting, developing, whatever that is. You're responsible for the who. And no one else, you cannot outsource being responsible for the who. There's other people that can help you own what we're talking about today, but you are responsible ultimately for the who. You're also responsible for the how. This would be like the method, the model, the strategy, whatever you want to call it. Like whatever we're getting done, how is the meeting, like how is the church going to do discipleship? How is the church going to do groups? How is the church, like, leaders cannot outsource the fact that they have to own the how, right? And then we also need to know that we're responsible for the measurements. And I know we get scared about this, or maybe we get nervous about this, but if the why, like if the why we're doing what we're doing, if we don't know if we're doing it, if we don't know if we're winning, if we don't know if it's working, then we're just leading people on a really long walk but that has no destination. So we want to know, like, fight yourself to make sure that you're responsible for, is what I'm leading working? Is our staff, for instance, is our staff healthy? Well, shoot, that's really hard to measure, but if that's one of the things we're going after, then what are the things that make a staff, like what can you measure to measure the health of a staff? It's worth figuring out, if I'm responsible for having a healthy staff, then what are the measurements of that? Larry Osborne, I just sat in his breakout yesterday afternoon. It's the best I've ever heard. So Gil, get the breakout from yesterday between the difference between health and mission. It was money. I wanted to copy it all and say it was mine, but I didn't. So, and then we've got over here, we've got the what, and this is like the structure, the organization, this would be your HR stuff. Like whatever the hard organization, org chart, like what are people, what are we having our people do? They need to know what they're called to do. And leaders have to own that. And then you're also responsible for this how to house. You can, when you do your own, you can get over it. You can write something else. But the how of the culture, the values, the intangibles, the ethos, like leaders of this is what leaders are responsible for in every meeting and every one-on-one and every team and every church and every event. So this is overwhelming. But what I've found for me is it's helpful for me to help when I say to somebody on our team, I want you to lead this thing, whatever it is, that we know on our team that this is what we expect that they're responsible for. Do they have to do it all? No, but they're responsible for it. But we also go in here that where you lead is not just what you're responsible for, but what you lead from, like who you are, is way more important than what you do. So we talk about healthy leaders lead from a really good position of identity in Christ. They know who they are in Christ. That's the foundation of everything. I am not what I do. I am who Christ says I am. Nothing more, nothing less. So I lead from a healthy center here. I also have a personality, a God-given personality and wiring. I also have giftedness. I also have, let's hopefully have, say we have some character in here. So, but who we are in here is how we can actually be responsible for that stuff. So that's just a frame that I've been trying to think through that's been helpful for me to help as well. I'm talking to our staff and our leaders, and I have terrible handwriting, so please clean it up and make it look better at some point. But any questions on that stuff before we jump in? This is kind of the frame that I think through team and leadership and ownership and things like that.
So two things in the bottom part of your little in the middle there.
Character and giftedness.
Thank you.
Yeah. And most of us as leaders on some level, we're really good at some of these. We're not really good at all of them. I am way better here in the who than I am in the what. But for our church, I'm responsible for it. Like, so I've got to make sure that I have great people that are leading the what or organizing the what, but I'm still responsible for what they do with the what. Does that make sense? Okay. what I thought, any other questions about this? Yeah.
I have a question. I'm having a hard time phrasing it in my head. So with the good inside part where you're leading from,
yeah,
when you're leading someone, are you saying you're also responsible for that piece, figuring out your giftedness, your character, or is that something that you help them along in?
I think that you can take risks. I've never take risks on character or somebody that doesn't know who they are, because then they will attach their identity to their role or their function or their job instead of who they are in Christ. But I would take risks on development times. There's times to take risks on people, but part of when you hand somebody something, you've got to see some of the things in here, depending on what you're handing them. If you're handing them kids check-in, they could probably have some development. They may not be a Christian for very long or a Christian at all, but that's a risk that you could take with them to have to do kids check-in. Versus being a campus pastor, probably going to have to anchor in a little bit more in here type of thing. Does that make sense? And I don't know how to define that, but it's like you know it when you see it a little bit. And what positions would we take risks on? Risk is not, that may be too strong of a word. So does that help? Other questions? More may come up. That's okay. All right. So I would say a team or staffing is specifically for plants is the riskiest, most expensive part of the whole process. So whenever you're inviting someone onto your team or onto your staff, it is the riskiest thing that you do, because every add to your center team has the potential to take your team down. Now I'm not doom and gloom Eeyore, but that's just the truth. Because every add that you add to your team also jacks up the chemistry for the good or the bad. It's never a static thing. So it's the riskiest, and if you're going to hire them, it's the most expensive thing that you're going to do. Because you make a hiring mistake that costs money, and it takes about 2.5 to 3 times the dollars to undo that mistake. No matter if you let them go longer than 6 months, it's going to cost about 3 times their salary in finances to undo the mistake, not alone the ethos and the culture that they helped wreck or ruin or mess up that you didn't want to create. So staffing is crazy, crazy, crazy important. Building a team is crazy, crazy important. There's a quote from Keller that every single person in the world, I think, quotes Keller, so I figured I should too, that Christian leadership, and this is the great definition for me, Christian leadership is mobilizing God's people with God's gifts to get God's goals in God's ways. And I think that we as leaders sometimes get messed up in that we feel like we're mobilizing God. It's God's people. We didn't gift them. God gifted them. And it's God's goals and in God's ways. And all of those are massively important. God's people, God's gifts, God's goals, God's ways. And if we get off in any of those as we're helping serve people, then we're jacked up and really, really way off. So one of the things that on the leadership component, I would say, just talking through, one of the things that we say a lot, some values that have shaped us, is what can't a volunteer do? So that's a question that's been a driving question for us at Mission. What can't a volunteer do? Anybody have just want to take a stab at it? It's rhetorical, I know, but now I'm asking you to talk back. So what can't a volunteer do? So if you have an elder in your church, most likely they're volunteers. I know some of us have paid elders. That's okay. But we have a management team that are moving towards eldership. They're all volunteers. The management team can fire me. Elders can fire me. So if a volunteer can fire me, so that's we know that they can do that. So they can lead the church and they can fire me. That's great. Can a volunteer teach? Yes. Can a volunteer count the money? Yes. Can a volunteer lead groups? Yes. Can a volunteer lead student ministry? Yes. Can a in my mind, there's nothing that a volunteer can't do without the right character, time, investment, development, like capacity, giftedness. But a driving force for us and our staff culture is what can't a volunteer do? Because I think what gets in the way of ministry sometimes, like Ephesians 4, like equip the saints to do the work, right? What gets in the way of ministry sometimes is that us as pastors get in the way of a volunteer because we think that there's stuff that our job that they can't do, when in reality we exist to help the church thrive. And what can't a volunteer do? What can't they play? So that'll be a question that will mess you up in a good way. And I hope it messes you up to start thinking through, am I the bottleneck of why people aren't volunteering or playing in the kingdom at our church? Maybe. Can't delegate what you can't define. This is helpful for me because I am an ENTP. If you know your Myers-Briggs, I'm very intuitive and there's stuff in my head that I have a hard time explaining. So a lot of these values are people that have been diving into my head for our team to help articulate what it is and why we think this way. So and for me, I can't give somebody, this is part of what this is, I can't give somebody student ministry. Like we just gave a resident student ministry to lead for the year. But I can't give them student ministry if I can't define exactly what it means to me that they own student ministry and what the most important things are. With job descriptions and with this, that he knows that he's responsible for all of this. And he's like young, new, in over his head. I love it. He's scared to death because he's like, I can't do all this. And I'm like, none of us can do all this. That's part of what developing can team and learning to lead and learning to mobilize God's people with God's gifts to accomplish God's goals and God's ways. So, but you can't delegate what you can't do. Third, don't start something without a clearly defined leader. Man, I don't know if you've learned this lesson the hard way. You start something without a clearly defined leader, it will blow up, and then you will have to own it and fix it, and you have too much to do already, probably. So, and even if it's two clearly defined leaders, get ready for some fireworks because one of them needs to own it. One of them needs to be responsible for this. There's two high capacity people that we have on our team that are both leading one thing. I made it like we went against one of our values. We know it now, and we've said we've got to pick one of them to be the point leader. Not because they're both fantastic leaders. They're better leaders than I am. But we got to pick one of them to own the responsibility of this. Does that make sense? So you don't start something without a clearly defined leader. Marry the mission, date the model. That's totally Andy Stanley. So, but it's been helpful why is way more important than how. Because you're going to have another leader that comes in, or you're going to have people on your team that will always probably argue in a good way, healthy ways, about how we're going to accomplish something. But the why, like we're trying to get people in circles to be an authentic community. How you do that probably looks different all across this room. And that's good. It's okay. And there'll be somebody that comes into your church and wants to do it a little different, as long as it's not against the why we do what we do. So marry the mission. This is the mission. Why we do what we do. Date the model. How? So that's helpful. Results you're getting are perfectly designed for the systems that you have in place. My people just won't show up on time for a huddle. or my people don't volunteer, or my, first of all, they're not your people. We mobilize God's people, right? So, but if you've ever thought there's something wrong with our church that we that's the problem is, like, the system, the results you're getting are perfectly designed for the system that you have set up. Leaders own it. When something's off in the organization, leaders own it. They go, you know what? The reason that our people aren't doing X, Y, or Z is my fault. Because I have enabled or created a system that it gets the those results that it's perfectly designed to get. Does that make sense? We'll keep running through these. We use the phrase "for now" a lot. So this will be, this is like maybe the only leadership goal I have to offer in building a team, is that you say, for now. This is your job and role for now. This is what we're doing for now. This is how we're doing it for now. This is where we're going for now. This is not forever. This is just for now. So leadership also is, you want to hold, component is that we tell everyone to hold their office space and their job description lightly and loosely, because we will always be moving around to try and figure out what's the best way to deploy all of us for the kingdom. So, because when you get entrenched and entitled, you get in trouble. Make it personal, leadership component. If you're going to lead a team, you got to make it personal. You want to lead, you want to be a healthy leader, you have to make it personal. You cannot distance yourself from your team. They're not peons that work for you, right? What I think, I really do believe, is that if I'm going to make it personal, that my role is to serve my team. Like, I am the chief servant of my whole team. That's who I am. I walk into the door and say, what do they need to thrive? Emotionally, physically, spiritually, in their job, I serve them. They don't exist to serve me. And so I think when leaders in any way, or in any team that they lead, or any ministry that they lead, or any event that they lead, or any church that they lead, they need to be able to walk in like, I think, from leading from the center of knowing who they are and say, my role is to serve everyone else. That's my chief role. And so they don't exist to serve me or kiss the ring or do my bidding. I serve them. Now, one of the ways I serve them is helping it be clear what we're called to, helping me clear of why we're doing what we're doing, but helping me clear of what's in bounds and what's out of bounds culturally for us. But as I'm a chief servant of my team, that's what I want to be at. Another leader, this is probably a culture component. I'll save that for the end. So any questions so far on the leadership component? Got it? Great. Great leaders. Good to go. So I'm going to say hiring component, and that may be recruiting. That may be, you may not be able to financially hire. We can't financially hire a lot of people, but we have a lot of volunteer staff that are in our staff meetings that we give email addresses to. They ask off for time. Like, you would be, I know that you're a high capacity volunteer. In our term, you'd be a volunteer staff member, where you'd be in staff meetings where if you could, we would arrange stuff around your schedule. You'd have an email address at our church, and we would, you'd also have to ask off, because if you're a staff member, you'd have to be able to ask off and know, make sure your stuff's covered when you're gone. So we have those positions, and you can interview and hire to that even if you can't have any money for it. So think through it that way. So the hiring would be recruiting, all that kind of stuff. Hire great. There are no excuses not to hire great or have great people on your team. Do not settle for the upper positions in your organization, in your team, in your event, to just be warm bodies that you place. One of the things that I believe is, don't interview alone. So when you're bringing somebody onto your team, do not interview alone. I'm pretty intuitive and pretty relational, but I make so many mistakes when I've interviewed alone. So even if it's for a team member on a position, like, get somebody else's feel, vibe, or eyes on that person that you're inviting onto the team. It matters. And don't be with them. Make them interview outside of you, that you're not there, so you can get their unfiltered take on who they think the person is. On a higher level, send through assessment of some kind. You need outside professional eyes. This is if you're building a staff team at the top. You may not want to do that as you're adding a volunteer for kids ministry. You may not need to do assessment. But on the top, upper level hires, get outside professional eyes. Hire, like when you're inviting people on, emotional intelligence, or what I say is EQ, is greater than IQ. EQ, we are in the people business. So if their people skills suck, do not invite them onto the team in a people role. So, because I feel like if people have emotional intelligence, we can help them learn the style, the structure, the system, the way that we do it. But if they are the wrong, if they can't engage with people or engages with them, is like, dude, I hate that guy. He's a jerk or she's awful. They have like, or they're awkward socially. Like, be wise on what positions you bring them to, because EQ is greater than IQ. EQ is greater than IQ. EQ is greater than IQ. All right. That's pretty important to me. Hire slow or invite on slow. Like, be slow to give titles and positions, because entitlement comes from that. So do that slow. Vet them over time. But when it's time to fire or ask to move or remove from leadership or remove from a team or remove from position or remove from, do that fast. When you know, move towards the mess and do it fast, because you've probably already cost your team a little bit of culture by having maybe the wrong person, and the longer you wait, the more damage, not morally, but like the more damage it does to the ethos of your team. So tests. All of our team, we do tests. We know each other's DISC. We know each other's StrengthFinder. We know each other's Myers-Briggs, spiritual gifts. I'm tinkering with the Enneagram. I don't know if you know that. And we know each other's thinking wavelength. So we talk about that stuff all the time, because of a healthy culture environment. We've got to know how God has wired us, personality, giftedness. It's been actually helpful for our marriage too. It's great. This is the stuff that's not changing about these people. Like, God can refine them and transform them into the best versions of these kinds of things, but the DISC, the Myers-Briggs, all that stuff is not changing. It's how God's wired them. So knowing how each other are wired is super helpful in our team process of engaging together. Are you familiar with those tests, DISCs, Myers-Briggs? Yeah. So, and not one of them, I'm not like a test freak, meaning like I don't think I look at a test, like if you told me you're Myers-Briggs, I wouldn't be like, oh, I know exactly who you are. I don't think of it that way. But I think when you start getting 5 or 6 of those that as a team you're comfortable with and know the language, it gives you a pretty good view when you put 5 or 6 of them together of who each other are. Anyway, not one in whole totality, but this is old, this is not me, but when you're hiring or asking people onto your team, that's the 5 C's. There's 3 classic C's, and I've added a couple. The first is character. Never fudge on character. And I know we say like, yo, but he's a great guy. He's a great girl. She's a great girl. She'll be awesome. Da, da, da. Don't fudge. That's not character. All right. Character is who they are in here. Like, what kind of pain have they navigated? Like, what's the relationship with Christ look like? Where are they being refined right now? Like, what are they solid from the inside out all the way through integrity? Like, what is their character? And if we're not diving into that as we ask people onto our teams in different places, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. And never, never, never fudge on character, ever. I know we all know that, but that's the prime mistakes that we will make when we invite people in on a volunteer capacity and a staffing capacity. So if you know that that's the primary mistakes that we typically make, then never fudge on it and make sure you're anchoring in on that. Character, chemistry. Like when you drive up and you see their car, are you excited that they're going to be in the meeting that you're going to be in? Chemistry is really, really, really important to me. Competency, meaning can they do the job that you're asking them to do? Like, do they have the skills, ability, knowledge, emotional intelligence, whatever it is, can they do the job that you're asking them to do? Those are the 3 classic ones. There's 2 more that I'm adding. Are they coachable? That's the 4th one. Because coachability goes a long way, because it speaks to humility. So if somebody is humble and wants to be coached, there's a lot of things that we can do to help develop them. One of the things that I say is don't invite experts on to your team. Don't hire experts and don't invite them on to your teams in different ways, because in my opinion, this is not word of the Lord, this is Mike Hickerson. So experts tend to be arrogant because they think that they've got their field figured out, and experts tend to have a position to defend, most likely usually around the how something should be done. So when you hire an expert, you can, that's great, but know that there's probably going to be some bumps with them and the rest of the team if anyone ever questions, has the audacity to question the expert on how they want to do something and is that the best way. So does that make sense? So coachability is the 4th. The 5th is capacity. And that speaks to some of the risk. When I'm inviting people onto our team, I'm not just looking at what their competency is right now in this moment. I'm also looking at what could they be that they don't even see in themselves yet. Like, what's their capacity eventually? Like, what if we could lift their eyes up and they, like, God got a hold of them and what he called them to something, what would that capacity be eventually? So I would take risks on capacity if I see some potential in somebody that they don't see in themselves yet. Cool. So I'm going to stop there. I know that I'm just throwing tons of stuff at you. So we'll stop and make sure that we are all good and can breathe, and then we talk about some more stuff. So anything that's not making sense or you want me to repeat or questions about? Yeah.
With hiring and recruiting, this volunteer staff concept too, at what point do you say this person is potentially volunteer staff? What does that look like? And then what does the firing look like for someone who's volunteer staff? And then I have another follow-up question, so I'll wait.
Good. So, like, let me tell you who's, let me tell you the areas of our church that a volunteer leads. And right now, this won't be the case forever, we're 4 years old, but everyone that receives money has fundraised their salary. So that's an ethos thing, that there's not a lot of entitlement around finances because we've all fundraised our own. I didn't just fundraise my salary, but we all have fundraised together, everybody that's done that. So these are the ministries that a volunteer leads right now. Well, we just hired a kid, but her husband got her pregnant, and we're mad at him. So there's going to be two leaders of kids while she's on maternity leave. Of mission kids, recovery, pastoral care, students, connections, programming, and we just have started a couple women's events, so I'm hesitant to even say those on here, but we'll say women's. So that's volunteer staff leads all of those areas. They report in, they have one-on-ones, they have check-ins, they have, if you don't know what 15-5 is, 15-5, it's the best check-in and management tool I've ever seen. So I, as a manager, can send 4 questions that I want asked answered every week, and I can change the questions, I can do it every 2 weeks. It takes them 15 minutes to answer those questions. We come into a meeting, we already know what we're going to talk about. So anyway, 15-5. But so all of our volunteers lead all of these positions. Now, some of them, my wife, when we planted, we had 3 couples. We couldn't have 6 salaries. We had all worked together. So we made a tactical decision that I was going to get paid, our worship leader, TD, was going to get paid, and our executive pastor, Jim Sheldon, was going to get paid. And all of the wives of that chose, they're like, we can't put the weight of those salaries on the church, and so we will give the best hours of our day and time into mission because we believe in it, and they've never received a salary from it. So we cheated because our wives are high capacity, and they started leading some of these areas, programming and connections, and then it became normal. We didn't plan on doing this, but it became normal then for people to walk into our team and go, I could do that. I want to be a high-capacity volunteer that could do that. I'm never going to expect that I'm going to get paid because I know that they don't, but it's normal to give time to that. And so we have a team. Our staff meeting has probably 15 to 17 people, and there's only four full-time equivalent FTEs in the room. So does that make sense? I'm trying to expand what can't a volunteer do.
Yeah.
We would, and so we've adjusted. We do staff prayer Tuesday at 9, and we do staff meeting at 10. It hasn't impacted anyone that we've brought on yet to do that. There is some probably ministry team leadership that I would move to the evenings for that, but it depends probably on who the person is. If it's the right person I need in the room, I would move a lot of stuff to get them in the room. So that's something that we always have considered too. When we were launching, we did all of our meetings at the evening at one of our houses because we all had kids and we needed to do that. So
there's never a time when one of these people expects to get hired or says the church is going to pay me eventually if I'm good enough.
Yeah.
There's just not that culture.
There's not that culture, and I would say we take care of them well. Like, our management team will go, at the end of the year, it's never me. They decide it. They say, hey, we want to give you X amount of thousands of dollars to be able to spend and say thank you to your volunteer staff. And so, like, I don't get bonuses at the end of the year. We take some money and we go, okay, these people have given their time for free. How can we say, you know, there's nothing that you're going to be able to do as leaders that can motivate a teammate salary-wise. We can't pay them enough anyway. So most of them aren't working for us because of financial reasons anyway. You know, if they needed help, if one of these came up and said, hey, I need to make $600, is there a way that you could help me hourly? We would bend over backwards to figure it out. But there's not an expectation that that's the highest motivation for them right now. So, but we got to start that way. And like changing into that is, that's hard. So, yeah.
So kind of along with her question.
And I know you have a question too, and then I'll get to you.
About like volunteer positions.
Yeah.
Okay, you hire that volunteer into that
right.
position, and there comes a time where you need to fire them.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work out?
It would be the same. Like we, again, our team would hold their job descriptions and their offices loosely. So but we had a girl named Xochitl, spelled X-O-C-H-I-T-L, just like it sounds. she was leading students, okay? She took some time because she was going to, they thought that they were going to be able, they had a foster kid that they were getting ready to get. It fell through, but she was going to be a mom. So we had figured out another plan for a resident named Greg to come in and lead students. Xochitl comes back and is like, hey, the foster thing fell through. I'd love to be back on the team. We said, awesome. Greg's going to lead students. We actually need you to help lead kids while Lauren goes on maternity leave. So we're really good to go. Like, we think the best play for you is to move here. So if we needed to not invite her back, I would be like, honestly, right now is not the best time. Or you just lean into the mess. Like if you got to fire a volunteer. I mean, if you haven't, like when you lead student ministry or something, you got to learn how to ask a volunteer not to come back. It's hard because you're saying our ministry is better if you didn't give any of the time that you were giving for free. That's really hard to say. So you got to and it shouldn't be a surprise to them. That's when you fire, it shouldn't be a surprise. Because some of that is the 15-5, why haven't you got this done? We need to see this improvement. Not like in a cold way, but in a way like, hey, you're not calling the people that you said you were going to, like, this is not going to work. Are you okay? Is there a time thing? Is this too much for you? Do you need help? Like, what is it? So we would fire.
But this 15-5 thing is
It's like an online, and it's not, it's an online, anyone else use it? Anyone else heard of it? It's an online, like, management help. Like, if you Google 15-5, the website will come up, and it's super. And for me, like, I don't manage most of our staff. I'm a terrible manager. There's an executive that manages them, because if you were to come into me, I'd be like, wait, why didn't you get done what you said you were going to get done the last week? Why do I have to go back and help you get done that? You know, but the Jim, who's awesome, is a great developer. I would rather come into a staff once a month and be like, let's lift your eyes up. Why don't you use me as a consultant of what you're wanting to do and thinking and help. Let me help you think and let me help you see the future. I'm really good at that. I'm terrible at managing the day-to-day. So, but 15-5 enables Jim to, I can see all of them. He can copy me. He can tag me on it and I can go back through and answer questions really, really quick instead of them waiting to get to me in a month or something like that. So. You had a question.
Yeah, you talk about some tests.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So afterwards, I'll give you a list of them, and you can probably Google and find them. There's some free online versions that aren't the full, like, you know, 100 questions,
yeah.
But they give you a pretty good picture. That's what we use for our team.
Okay.
So I'll give you the list.
Thank
so,
you.
Where are you from?
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica? Awesome. Welcome. So, Tico's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have like stipend or part-time staff as well, and how do you decide what's worth that?
So our part-time staff that we do have is administrative, because we have a gap on our team administratively. So we thought that if we could support all of our staff that are awesome with hiring some hourly administrative help, it would really help us all flourish. And administrative help is the cheapest and hourliest to find. So we have an office manager who works about 20 to 30 hours a week, but she also just has moved to helping support administratively the connections process. And we have a 20-hour a week, like, think executive assistant, but it's not that sexy of a title or a job. It's like she's helping do HR stuff, insurance stuff, project stuff that, like, we just need somebody that has that mind that can go and dig and find it. So that those are, we probably need some more administrative help, but we're slow to hire. So, yeah.
One more on that, since you mentioned
no,
the the insurance stuff and that. Do you provide any benefits at all for the unpaid staff?
You know what? That's a great question. We don't currently. We're trying to figure out how, if, and when that would be possible or even financially reasonable. So, because I don't know that that's a motivator, but if anything that we could do, like the bonus thing we do at the end or taking them to conferences, buying their lunch, you know, we do a lot of things to say thank you. Like we do a lot of retreats together. Some of that's the culture and development. Yeah. Like a lot of why these people are connected is because we invest a lot of time into them. Because we believe in them and also trust them and also love being in a circle with them. Right. So to do this, you have to invest time, energy, money, and all that kind of stuff. Yes?
With these people, with recruiting them, are you looking for a certain type of person, someone who is maybe a stay-at-home mom, you know, someone who doesn't have a normal 40-hour 9-to-5? Sounds like that kind of happened organically.
It's happened organically. I don't know, like, this guy owns his own business and is the most evangelistic person that I know and just got clean probably 3 years ago, walked away from the porn industry where he was making millions of dollars and gave his life to Christ and is awesome. Like, and so it's a privilege to sit in a circle with him. He's the most evangelistic person I know. His wife is leading a Bible study right now, which is hysterical. Like they have now, they're competing of like how Christ-like they can get. So it's awesome. He has free reign over his schedule. The pastoral guy, he owns his own business, but he is in the life EMT and a executive protector. Like he does executive protection. So like Bill Gates comes into town, he may get a call to go. So he does our security and medical, but he also has been a chaplain for 30 years. And so he loves the pastoral. Like, let me go to the hospital. Let me do a funeral. Let me help somebody take a next step. Let me be a life coach. Like he's built a team that does that. But that's because he owns his own business and he's almost retired and wants to do this. Students is a resident that fundraised. He's just out of college, fundraised his salary for a year, and we invest in him like a staff member, but always thinking about at some point he's going to leave, and whatever you do next, we're excited for.
So with resident, these are people that are young, or what does that term mean?
So a volunteer, like a resident, an intern would be 2 months not fundraised, come in the summer, typically 2 to 3 months in the summer. A resident would be 6 to 18 months. Where it's kind of like a medical resident, like they've graduated the training, but they don't know how to practice yet. And so usually post-college, 6 to 18 months, and they come in to have on-the-ground training, and then we send them out, hopefully, to whatever. We always say, we're going to help you with whatever's next. We can't promise you a job here, but we'll help you with whatever's next. So.
But those people are kind of staff.
Kind of staff. But we help them. The intern's not. I mean, we treat them like staff. But we help fundraise. We don't pay them, but we say it would have been really valuable for me as a college kid to learn how to fundraise. The first time I fundraised was when I was fundraising to start Mission. So I would have done a lot of things different now. So cool. Let me just run through a couple of the culture ones. So what I think creates a healthy culture, and then I'll leave some more time for questions as well. So the first one is conflict. Like, be awesome at handling conflict. Go directly towards it. Be the most healthy team that you've ever seen. One of the values that we hold is that whatever closer you get to whatever you think the most center table of Mission is the healthiest table relationally, emotionally, spiritually, friendship-wise that you've ever seen, conflict-wise. So one, that's a stated value for us. Whatever, the closer you get to whatever you think the center is, that it's the healthiest that you've seen. And so we know that I'm responsible in a meeting. I'm responsible if there's stuff that's out of whack, conflict-wise, that hasn't been handled. I'm responsible to make sure that they go get it handled, or that we fight it out in the meeting and can walk out in agreement. There's a video called Differentiated Leader. If you Google differentiated leader, it's like a 3-minute video. We've watched it probably 20 times as a staff because we don't. There's a thing called getting triangled, and getting triangled is where I'm going to come vent to you about how bad your boss is, and like, can you believe that he did this? And I brought you in to like this right here, and we haven't talked to him about it. And so What one of the things that would be fireable on our staff on any level is if I can talk to you about him and you don't tell me to go talk to him and then hold me accountable to go talk to him. Because you're not, you've brought me into it, but I'm going to remain healthy and not go there with you. I'm going to make sure that you go handle it well. And the awkward part goes, and in 3 days, if you don't, I'm going to go to him with you to make sure that it gets handled. So we really obsess about conflict because we want it to be a conflict being healthy. Not, we don't want to have lots of conflict, but because we want to be the healthiest at the center. And most of us don't handle conflict well, from whether it be the way we were brought up, our families of origin, lots of other stuff, but we want to be great at handling conflict. So that's one of our values. One of our values that create good culture is that the team you're on is greater than the team you lead. So I don't need any experts walking into our whole staff meeting defending the team they're on. What I need them to know is that I need them to know when they walk into whatever team they're on, that's way more important than the team that they lead. Because you can make decisions, like if you lead groups, we lead groups, and you're on the team that's deciding, you know what the best thing is for groups this year is that we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Well, you've got to be able to take your group's expert hat off, because if that is the best decision for the church, you know it's right, you then have to put on your group's hat and go, okay, that's a big to me, and because the team I'm on is greater than the team I lead, and I have to be able to now take the direction from the team I'm on and lead the team that I lead. It helps diffuse silos, turf wars, battling. Is there any more description on that? So, like, I'm on our management team. Like, I'm the lone staff representative on our management team. They can fire me. That team is way more important than the team that I lead, and I lead our staff team. But the team that I'm on as a management team is way more important than the team that I lead. Does that help frame it up a little bit too? Okay. That helps create a culture of... it just helps create culture. Marry the mission, date the model is the same thing that helps create culture. There's a commitment to sharpening. We evaluate everything. So if you were on our team, or if somebody on our team was sitting here, we would throw up this session on a staff meeting or an event that you're going to lead on a staff meeting and go, what are you going to do? How's it going? And then afterwards, we'd be like, what was good? What was bad? Like, what did you learn? Like, this is all public stuff that we do together. So it's normal for us. Our team is very opinionated. So it's normal for us in a staff meeting to fight healthily about whether something was good or bad, or what we liked about it and what we can never do again. But it's the first time that it happens to the young staff or new staff coming in, they are petrified because they think they're going to get ripped apart. We don't do that. But our team is very opinionated, and it's free flow, and we're committed to sharpening everything. Not because we need it to be done our way, but because we want whatever is done to be the best it could possibly be, and multiple eyes on it, multiple voices speaking into it, multiple minds thinking about it, right, never hurts. So, yeah.
I think what you just